Dr. Lamb was talking about this issue of convergence and then accommodation. And so I was thinking about, you know, kids don't know to say that the page looks funny to them. They just don't know that that's how they think it is. So I was thinking about some of the kinds of things that a parent might see that would help them to know that their child, you know, that they should maybe get a developmental eye exam, or that their child is struggling because of how it looks on the page. And I know that's something we deal with as well. Are there things that you guys see as you work with students that tell you, wow, I don't think the page looks the same to them as it does to me?
Definitely. I mean, we see, and a lot of times because of the work that we do with attention challenges, sometimes our students' behaviors like get chalked up to attention challenges. They're avoiding reading. They're avoiding looking at the page. They just kind of glance at words and they guess. And so we see a lot of those behaviors. And a lot of times it does indicate that the child actually has weak underlying visual skills. And so I hear that a lot from teachers that like, well, he won't even look at the page, or he's just guessing. But if your visual skills are not supporting you well, yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable to look at the board or to look at the page. And you're going to avoid focusing because maybe you do have a convergence problem with your eyes. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to look like an attention problem. We see that all the time.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, I think one of the things that's really important to remember is that behavior has its root in something. So if you may have a child who, boy, they are just, you know, they try so hard, but they have really low stamina. So they start out really well, and then, you know, they're just not able to finish. Well, if they're working that hard, that inability to finish can be fatigue on many of their systems. But right now, I mean, definitely could be fatigue on the visual system. Or, you know, they're refusing to copy from the board. You know, maybe they are so slow at it because it's so difficult for them to shift back and forth between looking far at the board and close, that, you know, they don't want to be embarrassed like that. They don't want to be the slowest one. Maybe they'll just not do it at all. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the behaviors we see are actually symptoms of something else.
We were talking about screen time and how screen time affects learning, right? Mm-hmm. And so for screen time, remember when we're talking about our focusing system, right? So our muscle is having to focus according to the distance at the subject that we're looking at, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're looking at a screen that's say 16 to 18 inches away from our eyes are constantly, our muscles are constantly focused in at that near target, right? Let's say you're doing distance learning for 2 hours without taking a break, right? Your muscle is so tight after that, right? Mm-hmm. That can actually create sometimes if you look up and you try to look out the window, it's hard to see that clear because your muscle is almost like clenched in, right? Mm-hmm. So we are seeing as well as the position of the eyes, you're having to have your eyes in a converged position for a prolonged period of time. So those two skills coupled together can create a lot of eye fatigue. So what we are seeing visually as a result of distance learning is we are seeing more eye fatigue, more headaches or eye strain, definitely number one. We actually are getting a little bit more of blurry or accommodation issues. Patients saying, you know, my eyes are seeing a little bit more blurry. We can also see an increase in nearsightedness. So we call that myopia, right? But we know that nearsightedness can be partially environmental of what we're doing with our eyes. And if we're spending so much time on screen time and computer screens, that can actually cause our prescription to change as well.
Wow. Because our eyes are working so hard at that distance for so long.
Exactly.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. And so symptomatically, would that make a child not want to read or do other activities that involve visual skills that might be straining on the eyes other than screen time? Because we see our kids just preferring screen time all the time. It's almost like kind of like, you know, a drug. You get a little bit of it and then that's where they prefer to be all the time. And so I'm hearing a lot from a lot of parents right now that like, well, ever since we went remote learning, they're avoiding reading altogether. They don't want to do any work like on physical pages.
Hmm. Yes, yes. And, you know, I think the computer screen is great for many things. It has better contrast. It has better lighting. It moves, so it's dynamic. So from an attentional side, right, that's why I think kids gravitate so much more towards screen time than text on paper, right? But the thing that screen time is different than text on paper or different than a classroom environment is that our bodies really were not designed to sit behind a screen for 8 hours a day, right? Our bodies were designed to move. We need motor skills. We are dynamic. We need interaction with other people, right? You're getting all of that interaction in a classroom environment. And visually, you're constantly changing your visual system. You're looking far. You're looking out the window. You're looking at your teacher. You're looking at your classmate, right? And that movement of your visual system is actually good for your eyes, right? They say the best thing for your eyes is actually to be outdoors, right? And because that's a more like natural environment for our body. And so taking all of that interaction and then condensing it into just screen time, you know, and less movement, there's less body movement, less motor coordination going on. There's less eye movements going on, right? I think definitely it is not really how we're supposed to learn. You know, I think it's a great tool. And I think that technology and virtual learning is an excellent tool, but it's not where we want to be 8 hours a day.
Right. Certainly not me either. And I'm screen all day too, and I'm exhausted. So that makes a lot of sense. We do have another question. I'm just going to shift a little bit. Anne has a question about anything you can do if a child complains about floaters in the eyes.
Great question.
Okay.
So we have an eye. Our eye is actually not hollow. Inside of our eye, it's filled with a jelly. And that jelly is called the vitreous, right? So I always explain to patients, I say the vitreous is like, it should be like clear gelatin because you are seeing through that jelly in order to be able to see light outside, right? Now, what can happen is sometimes you can get like proteins, or it's almost like you'll get clumps in your gelatin, right? And at that point, we would call that a floater. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, there are many normal floaters. And so what you're seeing actually is when the light comes through the vitreous and it catches maybe that there's like a little, you know, what we call like a clump of gelatin, right? Like it goes through that floater. It casts a shadow on the back of the eye. And that's what you see. So commonly they'll say, oh, I saw something moving in the corner of my vision and I went to look at it and it was gone. You know, some kids say, oh, it looked like a spider web or it looked like a little ghost. All of those are normal. Okay, so floaters can be natural. You will see them more commonly when you look at blank screens. You look up at the sky and it's like a blank background. And that's when you'll notice them just kind of drifting in your vision. I wouldn't be too worried about that. Now, what you do want to ask for is you want to say, you know, is this floaters associated with any bright lights or maybe funny things in your vision that you never saw, like little black bugs, right? And if that is the case, then those things could be a symptom that floater might be associated with something more dangerous, like a tear in the retina. That's something you'd want to get checked out, right? So just ask for any additional symptoms. If they say, no, it's just that kind of that shadow and it goes away when I look at it, that sounds like a pretty normal floater to me.
Allison asks just if a parent suspects that their child has visual processing issues, she's just asking for kind of the right course to go. So you know, does that mean that automatically they need a developmental eye exam, or is it something that should be addressed, like the services that we have, or we do an assessment with students where we're looking at visual processing in terms of reading challenges and dyslexia? You know, Jill, certainly you have your answer, Dr. Lamb. You might have an opinion as well. We do carefully try to sort that out. If we think that a student needs to come see us, or if we need to make a referral, we do that all the time. So Dr. Lamb, what do you have to say about that?
I'd like to let Jill answer first, and then I'll answer next.
You know, I think that there is definitely some overlap, and some of, you know, you mentioned, Dr. Lam, you mentioned the core learning level of our continuum, and then moving up into the processing level. And honestly, a lot of what I learned, I mean, I kind of learned from a lot of different people in the field who were doing the clinical research, but a lot of what I learned in the core level and to some degree in the processing skills level were actually from developmental optometrists. So the field of developmental optometry, you know, absolutely, you know, overlaps with learning. So, you know, I think people are in pretty good hands with both of us. But I will say, Dr. Lam, you had mentioned that we want to be sure, and I we'll have to see if I can say this right, but we want to be sure that that we don't look at a child's learning problem and just attribute everything to the learning disability or the processing problem, but that we really make sure that, you know, that the issues that we can really impact more easily are dealt with. And some of those are those visual skills that you talked about, you know, I think. Do you remember when we had that conversation about that, that we don't necessarily want to assume that every single thing is related to the learning disability. We have to look at the root causes.
Right. So what I think is great, and we all take this approach, is that any child that is struggling, we know that it's a team approach. We know that you have to get such a great team of experts to really kind of be, you know, on the child's team and helping them mm-hmm. succeed. And so to answer Allison's question, I would say first get all your senses checked. You know, you want to get that, is there health check? You see your pediatrician, right? Is there vision check? You want to see an eye doctor, a developmental optometrist, and make sure those things are, you know, is everything great? You want to get their hearing check, you know, auditory processing, right? And then when you have your complete picture, right, you'll know which areas you need to focus on. Mm-hmm. And Jill, you and I talked about this, like the great thing about your center is you guys train a lot of these areas, right? You don't just train one. I just mm-hmm. specialize in vision, right? So I know vision and I know it like the back of my hand, but I need resources like you to help with the rest of things. If I have a learner that is not just struggling with vision, but that also needs auditory processing, Stoll Learning Center would be a great place that they could get training in both areas. But we have other students that maybe they just need areas in one section, like they just need vision, but everything else is strong, right? Mm-hmm. Then that would be appropriate to say maybe they just need vision therapy, you know, because that's just the missing piece of the puzzle that is weaker for them. And mm-hmm. so I say Stoll Learning Center is a very global approach. You guys have a lot of great resources at your center and you can test for things. But maybe from my perspective, I would say we're very specific, you know, so mm-hmm. if we know that we're looking for a visual processing issue, then I know exactly how to test and look for that. And so, Allison, hopefully that would answer your question as far as which route you should go first.
And, you know, I remember when I was a special education teacher, I had a student who had learning disabilities. I was a learning disability specialist. He was in my program, and he really struggled with reading. But one day he came in with glasses and his whole world had changed because he could see. I mean, he was like in wonder at the world because he could see. So we still had some remediation to do, but what a difference. Everything was so much faster then. So really looking at all the different pieces of the puzzle is important.
So. Thank you. We have another question, a specific question from Andrea. She did have an independent vision assessment for her son, and a convergence insufficiency was found, among other deficits. And she's asking for accommodations. They are going to start vision therapy, but what accommodations can she ask from the school once they are back in the classroom? What would be appropriate?
Well, first of all, I'm excited for your son. That's really great. I'm excited that he's going to start vision therapy. Accommodations. So remember that convergence insufficiency probably is a lot harder at mirror work, right? And so things that can help, one easy thing that we usually suggest for our patients is preferential seating, right? So that means allowing them to sit towards the front of the classroom. And even that can be a lot easier on their eyes. Another thing that is an easy accommodation to ask for is they would be able to use what's called a slant board. So a slant board is a board. It usually has some pegs behind it that can lift it. They've shown that if the reading material is at a 45-degree angle, according to the eye, so it's more perpendicular to their gaze instead of lying flat on the table, that's actually a lot easier on the eyes and the vision system, and they should have less symptoms. And so even being able to prop up his reading or his worksheets at school, that can be a helpful accommodation as well. Lastly, I would say if he requires it, if it's very helpful to him, asking the teacher to, you know, blow up the worksheets on a Xerox copy to make it a little bit larger, that can also be a helpful accommodation. And I think that's not too much to ask of the teacher, just to see if they can make a, you know, a little larger copy, if that would be helpful for your son.
Thank you. And then we have, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Kehalani. Asks that her son wears glasses. He goes to the optometrist, but he's also been diagnosed with ADHD, and he complains about dizziness when doing schoolwork. So she's just wanting to find out, is that, do you feel like that could be vision related, or is it something else?
So I'm not sure from the comment if these glasses are, you know, corrective glasses, like he needs them to see clearly, or if they were given to him as reading glasses, like developmental lenses, to help ease his eyes when he's reading. It actually is two completely different prescriptions. But if he's complaining of dizziness, I would definitely get a developmental eye exam done to test for some of these underlying skills, right? Could the dizziness actually be that maybe it's going a little bit double? Or maybe that when he is converging his eyes, when he's reading, it's very strenuous on his eyes and it can make him feel rather dizzy. So that is very likely. Another thing, let's say when we talked about the tracking issues, right? If he's getting lost on the page when he's reading, that could also be construed as dizziness. So definitely, I think there is a high chance that some vision issues could be going on with her son.
Okay. Similar to the same line, Susan asked, her 7-year-old was just given glasses. She does not like wearing them. She is a struggling reader. The eye doctor wants to wait for vision therapy to see if the glasses strengthen her eyes. She's just wondering, is that wise to wait, or should they, you know, get started with vision therapy?
Right. So glasses are great. We always underestimate the power of lenses. So in optometry, we believe that lenses can have a lot of just a great effect on the body. However, as well, imagine that you're looking through new eyes when you're looking through these glasses. So even if it's the correct prescription, it can feel very different to the child. And now you have to remember that when your child first gets a pair of glasses, there's two things they have to get used to. One is that things look different. Two is that they have something sitting on their face that they didn't like before. So sometimes when we have kids that, you know, don't like wearing their new glasses, we also ask the parents, like, do you think it's actually that they're just not used to having something sit on their face so long? You know, it's kind of cool and novel at the beginning. They try it on and say, oh, this is fun. But when they really actually have to start wearing it for a prolonged period of time, it takes they're getting used to the sensory, the new feeling of having something rest on their ears, maybe, you know, resting along their temples and resting on their nose. And so there may be some correlation with her just getting used to the feeling of those glasses, in addition to now how things look. And so even though lenses have a lot of power, and I do believe that those glasses can be very helpful for her daughter, it may take a little bit of a training period to get used to wearing them. So that's where vision therapy can also be helpful. Let's say she starts bringing her glasses to vision therapy and the therapist helps her to teach her how to use those glasses more properly and when to use them. I think that can really help her. So so many times glasses are part of our treatment. We will do vision therapy with glasses because we feel like they're very complementary. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's really helpful just to recognize that as soon as the child puts glasses on, things look different than they're used to. Even if it's better, it's different. Mm-hmm. And then the feel of it on their face. I mean, if you know, as parents and teachers, if we just recognize, yeah, it's a little different, isn't it? That is helpful in just validating where the child is and why it might feel a little bit uncomfortable. And we don't always think about that. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, just put your glasses on. But I think that's a great point.